waits the 1-1 pitch. Breaking ball line deep to left field. Back for it goes Nava. He jumps and makes a spectacular catch. The inning is over. And this is an inning you'll always remember. Jose Reyes line drive to center, a sacrifice fly, and this line drive caught to end the inning. Two runs across, but that's all. And we go to the bottom of the eighth inning. It's the Red Sox 7, the Blue Jays 4.
That inning could have been a lot different, absolutely. The Blue Jays had the bases loaded with nobody out. Jose Reyes crushed a ball to center field, but right at Jacoby Ellsbury. It was only a sac fly instead of maybe an RBI single, maybe a three-run double if it gets over his head. And then that bit of robbery from Daniel Nava taking away what was likely an RBI double by Edwin Encarnacion in that eighth. The Blue Jays had their chances, but buried early by the seven-run second inning against Chen Ming Wong. They fall to the Boston Red Sox 7-4. I'm Mike Wilner. This is the Blue Jays Talk, and we're taking your calls all the way till 11 o'clock Eastern at 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, and long distance 1-888-666-0590. Let's begin with Jay in Kingston. Jay, welcome to the Blue Jays Talk.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. I just wanted to start off and say, like, I'm really proud of our bullpen this year. I mean, they have just done a tremendous job. And to be upfront and honest, they gave us every opportunity to claw back in this game after that seven-run inning. They just done an amazing job. And I'm happy that they didn't send any of the bullpen guys down. I mean, I was thinking maybe Dustin McGowan could have got sent down. But, you know, it's just amazing how they've pitched. And they've just done a great job all year. I think they're our most consistent department and like on our whole team right now. And what really frustrated me is
awesome
that we were down 7-0, and the approach at the plate of all our hitters, if you go all the way from the third inning downwards, there are a lot of guys swinging at first pitches. You know, you're down 7-0, and let's be honest, John Lester was not at his best. I mean, obviously, he was staked to a big lead, but I think our hitters initially, if you look at the third, the fourth, the fifth inning, well, we got a couple runs there. Like Meister Stewart had a great at bat there, but I think our approach at the plate kind of let us down. And then obviously, our big boys didn't really come through for us today. I mean, Edwin scorched the ball there towards the end, but there was other situations where Bautista and Edwin just weren't able to get it done for us. I was really surprised. Do you think Jose lost that ball? Because I mean, if he makes that catch, I mean, obviously hindsight is hindsight, and, you know, Wong gets that double play ball, obviously, you're looking at a different inning. Maybe Wong recovers, or, like, what happened with Jose with that ball? Because I don't even know how that scored a double, to be honest.
No, that
should have been caught, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. That was one of the worst homer official scoring calls I've ever seen in my life.
I mean, it was just amazing how Stephen Drew gets a double there.
Yeah,
that was terrible.
But in the overall, it doesn't matter whether he gets a double or whether it's an error, right? If Jose Bautista catches that ball, first of all, you create an entirely different space-time continuum, and you can't say, well, he catches it and then Wong still gets the double play three hitters later, because that would not have happened. But, you know, at the time, it was already 2-0. There were two on, nobody out. The fly ball would have sent Nava to third, so you would have had runners on the corners, one out, down 2-0 at that point if Jose Bautista makes that catch. I really think he thought that the ball was hit a lot harder than it was, and he raced back to the track and then looked up, and when he looked up, it was landing right in front of him. So that was just a misjudgment on how hard that fly ball was hit by Jose Bautista, plain and simple. But I will echo your tribute to the bullpen, Jay. The bullpen has been, I mean, when you use the word consistent to describe them, it just shows what the meaning of that word has taken on in sports in the 21st century, which I think is ridiculous. The consistent does not mean excellent. The Blue Jays bullpen has an ERA of 0.82 in 76 and a third innings pitched in the month of June, which is just ridiculous. It's not consistent. It's awesome. And it really has been the bright spot. And yes, they did give the team the chance to come back. But how many times in a season can you come back from an early 7-0 deficit? They've already done it once.
Mike, you know, the Jays usually play well there, and we've had a good record there in the past. And we've seen a lot of games that have gone back and forth. And with Lester not having his best stuff, if Lester was really dominant, like, it seemed like Lester was just, he pitched okay. I mean, but he wasn't the John Lester that we've seen, where he's just been totally dominant. The cutter's working for him. His slider's working. Everything's working. And I just wanted to make a quick point. I don't understand why Adam Lind wasn't playing today. I know he's a lefty, and I know Lester's a lefty, but, you know, he's our most consistent hitter. He's hot right now. I mean, I know we're going with Mark DeRosa. I know he needs playing time. I understand that. But and he's a veteran, and I was really upset with some of the at-bats he took today, too. He was swinging at a lot of first pitches, striking out, and usually Mark doesn't do that. He's a pretty patient hitter. But I don't really understand why Adam Lind needs a day off right now, to be honest. Like, he's on a tear right now. He's been hitting lefties. I know if you're looking at his past records, but we got to look at this season. I think this guy's got to be in the lineup every day. I don't care who's pitching right now. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't think anybody's got to be in the lineup every day. Baseball just doesn't work that way anymore. And if you're going to give a guy a day off, it might as well be against a guy he's 3-for-29 lifetime against. I have no problem with Adam Lind not starting tonight, none whatsoever. I think you're a little too rough on first pitch. Like, it seems like, Jay, and I appreciate the call, it seems like the way you judge whether an at-bat was good or not is whether or not a hitter swung at the first pitch. There's nothing wrong with swinging at the first pitch if it's a good pitch. And remember that hitters are going to fail well over half the time. So I think you might be expecting a little too much from a lot of these guys. Brandon is in Norway, Maine. Welcome back, Brandon.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
Good. Go ahead.
I had a question. I was wondering why Mark DeRosa is batting fourth. I mean, I understand he hits lefties good, but Rajai hits lefties better. And I was thinking, you got to have Mark DeRosa behind Melky, behind JP, behind Rajai. I mean,
I think it's a little bit of confirmation bias on the part of John Gibbons, and a little bit of not really seeing anybody else who kind of fits there. He's not going to hit Rajai Davis cleanup because he's Rajai Davis.
Well, I know not there, but I think DeRosa needs to be below Rajai Davis. Somewhere in the order.
Just in a vacuum, he needs to hit behind Rajai Davis.
Yeah.
So who would have hit fourth for you tonight?
I would have had Melky Cabrera.
Really?
Yes.
Why?
Well, he's batting 280. He got a hit tonight. I mean, DeRosa.
We can't talk about what
he
did tonight because that doesn't count. It doesn't count what he did tonight. You're putting together this lineup before the game starts. Melky has been struggling terribly for
months. I just can't have DeRosa batting.
Right. But I'm asking you, who would you put in the cleanup spot? You tell me Melky, and I'll tell you that Melky has had a horrible month of June and that he's got a 280 on base this season against left-handed pitching. So I don't think Melky's a better one than DeRosa.
Well, I mean, DeRosa is 2-for-22 streak right now, which is a 0.091 batting average.
Uh-huh.
Which is pretty much all of June, which you can't really say Melky's had worse than that, though.
No, he hasn't been worse than that. It's true. But Melky has been worse against left-handed pitching than DeRosa has been.
Right. Which he's bat after tonight, he's got a 2.66 average versus lefties, and he's pretty bad against righties.
Yes. No, I'm not. Look, I'm asking you.
I'm telling you
the reasons I would not have put Melky Cabrera in the cleanup spot.
And you,
22
you even,
at bats. You know, DeRosa's had a tough little run. Cabrera's had a tough little run as well. Like I said off the top, the first thing I told you is I think it was a little confirmation bias on John Gibbons' part. He remembers the big hits that DeRosa's gotten. He remembers that DeRosa was on an absolute tear against left-handed pitching for the first 2 months of the season, and that's why I put him there. You ask, I answer. I didn't write the lineup out. But again, I don't know who I would have put in that four-hole. unless you're going to do something like put Rajay Davis second and move Bautista to third and Encarnacion to fourth, which is an interesting idea too. Roger is in Thorold. Roger, welcome to the Blue Jays Talk on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Hi, Mike. Long-time listener. I've called quite a few times, but first time this year.
Welcome back, then.
Congratulations, my friend, on your promotion.
Thank you. I appreciate that a lot.
You're doing a great job, and I listen to every single game. I haven't watched one on TV, so just a question and a statement. I just want to get your opinion on something here. Our best player, obviously, is Jose, and we need to get this guy going. And I heard last night we were during the talk that, you know, it was amazing that we went on that 11-game winning streak with Melky and Jose basically not doing what they could do.
Not doing much
Jose.
At all.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, what do you think about poking the bear? Because every time we seem to piss Jose off, or somebody does, like O'Day in the Baltimore series, the day before, he says something to him. Next day he comes out and he hammers a home run over the left field
a
wall.
Double. It's a three-run double, but yes.
Exactly. Well, we get that home run against O'Day, didn't he? It wasn't a double.
That's right. O'Day was a home run. The next day
was a
three-run double. Yes, you're right.
Just to teach him a lesson. And because right? And
I don't know if it was
every
just
time
to teach him a lesson.
Some, or an umpire gets on his nerves, he comes out. The next day he comes out and he hits 3-for-4. I wonder if it's time. What do you think about Gibbons poking the bear and taking him out of the two spot? Because obviously he's not producing there, and we need him to produce badly. Moving him down, maybe he'll get mad and he'll start producing. What do you think?
I don't think that's a good idea.
Why not?
Because I don't think you should intentionally anger your players in an effort to get them playing better. I don't think that that works. Coming from the side that's supposed to be supportive and helpful. You know, coming from the enemy, yeah, the enemy makes you angry. There you go. But the when your own guy does it to you, I don't think that's a good idea.
True, but if you're basically your number two spot is held for your best hitter. And right now, Jose is not our best hitter.
No, right now he's not. But you can't change the lineup every week based on who's going
Reyes came in and we got Melky out of there, obviously, for obvious reasons, and I understand that. But
right.
How long can we go on with having our best hitter in the number two spot and if he's not doing anything?
You ride it out. I really think you do. He's had bad months before. He's had great months. He's carried this team. He's
That's
been
true.
Their best player for the last 3 years. I think that you ride it out. Until he turns it around, because you know he's going to turn it around.
Well, I know eventually he will, but
right.
How long do you think we have to wait? Like tonight, we could have used him deadly in the first inning. That would have been wonderful, you know.
They
to get on
used
Lester.
Him a few times tonight in the eighth inning too. But you
know
what? He's a human being, right?
Oh,
and
sure.
Guys go through their ups and downs, and right now he's in a down. He's had a lot more ups. And I think you wait a while until you pull the plug on the guy who's been your best hitter. I appreciate the call, though, I do. And we're going to take some more at 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell. Long distance is 1-888-666-0590. The Blue Jays fall 7-4 to the Boston Red Sox. It is the Blue Jays Talk on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Now he takes a stretch, looks back at second, deals 1-2. Change at the left field, deep. Backcourt goes Melky. He turns. That ball's over his head off the wall. Base hit. Ortiz around third. He's heading home. The throw goes into second. Karp goes to third. Nava back to first. He's given Boston a 1-0 lead with the game's first hit.
After back-to-back leadoff walks in the second inning, that's why the game's first hit produced a run when it was only a single. And the Boston Red Sox would go on to score 7 runs in that bottom of the second inning on the way to a 7-4 win against the Blue Jays. Chenming Wong had a terrible inning, couldn't make it out of that second through 36 pitches, only got 2 outs, and they were both on one pitch on a double play ball. But the Blue Jays bullpen, again, was phenomenal. 6 in the third innings of 3-hit shutout, led by Juan Perez, who threw the fourth, fifth, and sixth, 9 up, 9 down. And the Blue Jays could not work their way back offensively. They lose it 7-4 on a night that looked like it was going to be a whole lot worse. Three games to go in this month, three games to go in this series, and on this road trip on which the Blue Jays are currently 1-3. I'm Mike Wilner. This is the Blue Jays Talk. We're taking your calls right up till 11 o'clock tonight, Eastern Time. Phone lines are open at 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell. Long distance is 1-888-666-0590. We go to Blaine in Toronto. Hello, Blaine.
Hey, Mike.
Hey.
Long time, very long time listener, first time caller.
Well, welcome aboard. Thank you.
Thank you, my friend. Just wanted. I'm certainly looking forward to a lot of exciting baseball as the All-Star Game approaches and beyond into the second half of the season. And well, who knows how things are going to finish up? I think the Jays are going to make it real close and make a run for it and keep us on the edge and play a lot of exciting ball. I just wanted to make a comment or ask a question about the broadcasting format, for example. I don't. I don't listen to any of the games. I mean, I don't watch any games on television. I listen to everything on the radio.
Good.
And I'm just wondering, is it always going to switch up with Jack Morris for the home games? Because I'm a big Jack Morris fan. Actually, I grew up in Windsor and went to tons of ball games kind of back in the day, you know, in Detroit. And grew up listening to, you know, Ernie and Paul, et cetera, et cetera. So have a kind of a standard for broadcasting. And I'm certainly really enjoying Jack Morris's comment and his addition to the team this year. And I find it a little bit disorienting when Dirk is taking over for him. And nothing against him and his approach to the game. But as a listener only, I find it a little bit, I wouldn't say upsetting, but kind of distracting to kind of miss out on Jack's part of the game. And I don't know if anybody else has commented on that to you or not.
No, nobody has. It's definitely a different thing that we're doing this year, but it's not that simple that it's Dirk at home and Jack on the road. It just kind of happened to work out that way in the month of June. I think Dirk is doing 25 or 30 games with us, and Jack is doing the rest.
Okay.
So Jack will be with us now right up until the series before the All-Star break when the Blue Jays are in Baltimore, those three games. Those will be Dirk's games. But, yeah, they're different. You know, they each lend a very different and very unique perspective. And for me, it's a lot of fun working with both of them.
I'm sure, and I appreciate Dirk's commentary as well. It's just that, I was excited when Jack came on board, and he brings a very special insight into the game and as far as his analysis of pitchers and just a kind of a game mentality. And I know, I mean, Dirk was a pitcher and a player too, of course, and he has his own perspective on it. I think I was just, getting used to hearing, listening to Jack and his commentary, and finding it kind of a little bit disorienting when it was switching up. And I understand, you know, the perspective that you guys are bringing to it, and appreciate it. But I just thought I'd let you know. I mean, I'm enjoying the broadcasting one way or another, but I really like it when Jack's on and what he brings. As well to the rest of you guys that have been there for a while, and make it really an interesting kind of experience to listen to the game.
Well, I'll let Jack know. I'm sure he'll be very happy to hear it. I'm sorry that you're disoriented, but I think the best thing to do is just to accept Jack for Jack, Dirk for Dirk, and you'll have a lot more fun listening
to the
podcast.
Listen, I mostly take that approach to it. You know, I just really got used to hearing Jack, and you know, at the beginning I was a little bit more upset about it, but now I've kind of settled in and realized what you guys are doing. So it's quality all the way around, of course.
Right. Thank you, Blaine. I appreciate the call, and I'm glad you're enjoying it. 84 games to go in this season. If Baltimore wins, the Blue Jays will be four games out of a playoff spot. It's going to be a lot of fun this year. Jody in Toronto. Jody, welcome to the Blue Jays Talk.
Thanks, Mike. First-time caller as well and long-time listener.
Cool.
Jody, I said first-time caller?
Yeah, and I said cool. Very nice.
Oh, cool. I thought you said who. I have a comment, like a lot of callers, regarding the lineup. I'm just confused by the logic, I guess, in having Jose Bautista batting second and before that batting third. Even last year when Jose was on a tear and the home run king, he was still batting third. I'm not sure why he doesn't bat cleanup.
Oh, because batting third is more important than batting cleanup, and getting up in the first inning is important, and you want, for a long time, the conventional wisdom, I guess the conventional wisdom still does say that you bat your best hitter third to make sure he gets up in the first inning, to get him up a little bit earlier on, to have his turn come around earlier as the game progresses, though now... Some good hard studies have been done that suggest it's a good idea to bat your best hitter second. But when you hit a guy fourth, he's not guaranteed to ever hit in the first inning, although when he does, he always will hit with runners on base, unless there's been a home run in front of him. But then you're also waiting that extra turn or two until his turn comes around when you turn the lineup over.
Okay, so my other point, I guess, on that is the lineup itself. Every time I look at the lineup before the games, I'm a little confused. That,
Sorry, Jody, we're starting to lose you on your cell phone. I guess we got a bad connection or something. Hang up and try to call us again. I'd love to know what you have to say, but we couldn't hear you anymore. So get to a better spot and give us a call again. Right now we'll go to Clint in Guelph. Clint, welcome to Blue Jays Talk on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Thanks, Mike. I have a question about Melky, and yep. I don't know if you've gotten this question before. I guess my question is around his hamstring injury or his leg injury, and I know logic, or everyone says just keep running them out there every day, and I imagine that's what your response is going to be, but if I call, I don't know. So, like, I guess what I'm wondering is, with the All-Star break coming up, and, Melky's been consistent most of the year, is there any chance that the Jays would ever take him, now that the pressure's off him, not having to be at the top of the lineup, give him 15 games combined with the All-Star break, and, you know, he might actually get about 20 days rest, or do you just keep running him out there every day?
I think they seem determined to keep running him out there every day as long as he's healthy enough to play. He looked terrible tonight. As bad as I've seen him this whole time with the leg injuries, the quad, the hamstring, he's got both legs going bad. And maybe it's because it was the cool weather. I don't know. But he looked horrible.
Reyes is back, so he's not at the top. And I know you don't speak for the Jays, but
does he need 2 whole weeks? Is the thing. Like that's the question. You're not going to take him out now. I mean, when you're running an 8-man bullpen and you're dealing with a 3-man bench, you're not going to give the guy a week off. But if he only needs 4 or 5 days, is it worth losing him for the extra 10, or if you give him 15 days and they don't get better, I mean, what do you do? He's still been okay for them. I mean, he's hit going into this tonight. What was he? One for four tonight. So he's hit over 270 in the month of June. So he's doing all right. But yeah, it is painful to watch. So the question
I agree with you. I just,
what do you do?
You think with the all, I just wondered with the All-Star break coming up if there'd be any benefit to doing that.
What is that? I don't know what that has to do with it.
Well, I guess what I was thinking is, you know, you put him on the 15-day DL combined with the All-Star break, you get the longer
so
rest
only,
period, and it might benefit him.
Well, for me, any thought about the All-Star break would be the opposite of that one. Is if you put him on the 15-day DL, you only lose him for 10 games. Because of the All-Star break, because you have those 4 days off that would count as DL time. I wouldn't see it as any extra rest. I think what it comes down to is he's willing to play, they're willing to keep throwing him out there, and he's not killing him. You know, he's doing all right. He can't run the bases, and yet he still managed to score a run today from second on that double by Astures with two out, even though He almost got lapped by Rajay Davis. He can't play the outfield, but in this tiny little left field in Fenway Park, it doesn't really hurt you that much. They seem determined to keep throwing him out there.
Okay, well, thanks, Mike. I appreciate it.
All right. I appreciate the call. And unfortunately, it's not like Anthony Gose is tearing anything up in AAA, demanding to be brought up here to play. Blue Jays lose at 7-4 to the Boston Red Sox. We are Blue Jays talking it up. Trevor in Kitchener, welcome to the program.
Michael Wilner, I'm so actually happy to be on the show. I really appreciate you taking my call, bud.
Oh, well, thank you for making it.
All right. Okay, so when did Alex Anthopoulos and the Paul Beeston say that there's, in the next 5 years, we're going to make the playoffs 2 out of the next 3 years? Like, when was that?
He said last year, before last season.
So we're in year two of five, right?
We are in year 2 of 5, right, where
okay,
he said
so if we don't
two
make
or
it
three times
year,
in 5 years.
We don't make it. If we don't make it this year, then yeah, they've got to make it two of the next three years
for Beeston to have been right. But are you expecting him to be clairvoyant?
Well, what I'm
I mean, you know he doesn't have the power to actually make the Blue Jays make the playoffs, right?
Well, give me 50% and give me 1 out of 5 then. But all I'm saying is, team's not good enough. They're losing to the divisional rivals who they shouldn't be losing to. So the
They're losing to the Yankees. They're not losing
to
any of the other divisional rivals.
They're behind. They're in fourth or fifth. They're in fourth or fifth place.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. So yes, they need to get better is what I'm trying to get at.
What you said is they're losing to divisional rivals who they shouldn't be losing to, and the truth in your statement. Well, the truth is that they're a game over 500 against everybody in the division but the Yankees. They lost today.
They need to get better, Mike. Like, come on,
They need to continue playing as well as they've been playing for the last 6 weeks.
Okay. So, yes, you're right, and I think AA is going to make a move because he's usually a pretty smart dude. So, what I'm trying to say is there's sweet players like Trout, Braun, Verlander, Reyes. All the teams that make it to the playoffs, make it to the World Series, if you go back in history, I'm sure there's between 1 and 3 Hall of Famers on each team. Would that be fair to say?
No.
1 to 3 Hall of Famers
on
each team?
No, that would not be fair to say. How many Hall of Famers? Well, there was
Molitor, Winfield.
In 92.
Okay, let's go. Like, even recently,
okay, but
Verlander,
you're talking about guys at the end of their careers who, you know.
Peter, the closer for the Mariano. And you know what I'm saying? There's got to be at least one Hall of Famer on each championship team if you go back in history. Minimum one. We don't have one. Reyes might cut it if he can stay healthy for this whole career. But what I'm trying to say is we need to get rid of the junk. So there's types of trades. There's trades for the future. There's trades for now. There's dumping salary. There's the GM who thinks he can change the player, like when we got Colby Rasmus.
Uh-huh.
So what I'm trying to say is, do you think Josh Johnson, Emilio Bonifacio would be some tempting bait for a National League team who thinks they can change them, or even trade when the stocks are high, like Adam Lind and Brett Cecil, who haven't really been that good over the last 3 years. But do you think any of those four players can get us a third baseman, a second baseman, or even a starting pitcher? Do you think we can get something for either of those four guys?
I don't know why you would want to trade Josh Johnson.
Because he's a free agent, and I don't want to pull a Colangelo on this team like Chris Bosh, right?
Well, but you're missing a rather huge point in that if Josh Johnson helps the Blue Jays make it into the playoffs.
How many wins does he have?
Who cares?
No, I do. I want Jack Morris on my team winning every game, letting up 5 runs. I don't want the guy last year.
Right, you know that Jack Morris on average won less than half his starts, right?
Oh, my goodness. He was a wicked player. But anyways, so Josh Johnson hasn't won any games, or he's 1-1 or 2? I don't know, because I know you're the smart guy, and you are the, you know all the stats. So that's why I'm calling you.
I have them all in front of me, too.
So how many wins does he have?
He has one win.
One win, I know. So he's not doing anything for us. So anyways, I think these guys are perfect guys to train.
Oh, Trevor.
Oh, my friend.
Trevor.
So listen, okay, another question, because I know you won't believe me, you won't accept this. But what do you think of the Jays getting a Hall of Famer, Robinson Cano, this year go up with Jay-Z and pay him some big money, get him to Toronto?
Hey, fine with me.
Yeah,
I'm 100% behind that. What are the
odds? Give him the money.
Slim to none.
If we give him the money, slim to none.
You think the Yankees aren't going to give him the same money? You think you're going to outbid the Yankees?
I know they're not.
Anyone's going to outbid the Yankees on Robinson Cano? Well,
hey, man.
It's not going to happen.
Okay, last point, and I will go because I know you're like a wonderful man. Prince Fielder was the biggest mistake that we did not sign. If it was 1 to 5 years, AA, you should have gotten him because he would have paid off.
But it wasn't. It was 9.
What was 9?
The Prince Fielder deal. If it was 1 playoff
one
spot
to five,
in 5
yeah,
years?
No, yeah, 1 to 5 years, we're going to make the playoffs. Prince could have been in the picture. I wish he did it. I love you, Mike. Shalom in the home, baby. Shalom in the home.
Thank you, Trevor. I think the Detroit Tigers within 3 or 4 years are going to be badly regretting that Prince Fielder contract. And I'm fine with the Blue Jays not having signed him. If you're willing to pay a guy $40 million a year for his 4 productive years, actually, the deal he signed, over $50 million a year for his 4 productive years, or $40 million a year for 5 productive years, it's a lot of scratch. Andrew Nye's waiting with an update. More of your phone calls on the other side. It is the Blue Jays Talk on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. That was scored a double somehow. A little Boston official scoring on a play that Jose Bautista should have made but didn't. And it kept the floodgates open as the Blue Jays gave up 7 to the Boston Red Sox in that second inning on the way to a 7-4 loss in the opener of this 4-game series. I'm Mike Wilner. This is the Blue Jays Talk. Phone lines are open at 416-870-0590. *590 on the cell and long distance 1-888-666-0590. In our last segment, we had Jody from Toronto on, but his cell phone cacked on us. He is back, hopefully with a better connection. Hey, Jody.
Hey, thanks. It's BlackBerry for you.
Oh, well.
My comments were regarding the lineup, and, you know, I just wanted to say that I think I'd be a lot happier a fan if I looked at the lineup in general, generally seeing Jose Reyes at the top and, say, Rajah Davis or Melky Gerber in the second spot, then Bautista, then Canarcian, and then Adam Lind, and maybe Colby Rasmus or whoever goes after that.
So why wait, though? Why take the chance that Bautista and Encarnacion and Lind might not get up in a, if the game as the game gets later, why don't you want them up more often or as early as possible to help the offense? Why would you put an inferior hitter in between Reyes and the big bats?
I just like to see the meat of the order in the meat of the order, if you know what I mean.
Why wouldn't you want the meat?
Late in the game when the runners are on base.
Why wouldn't you want the meat of the order coming up sooner? Is the ideal not to get your best hitters up as soon as possible and as often as possible?
When John Gibbons and the management started switching around the philosophy from home run hitters to runners, I thought the idea was to get the runners on base and get the speedy runners up and produce runs creatively, kind of thing, and then we would have the heavy hitters bring them in.
I don't think philosophy ever changed. I think they just added Reyes and Bonifacio, and those guys add that dimension of speed to the lineup, which is helpful and wonderful. But to the question that I asked, Jody, don't you want the meat of the order coming up as soon as possible and as often as possible?
I kind of like them in 3, 4, 5 spots. I just think it's more dangerous in late in the games.
Why is it more dangerous late in the game to have to wait for them to come up an extra hitter?
I just remember watching games as a fan watching games and seeing the opposing batters with runners on and the home run hitters up at the plate. It's just more intimidating. It's just the way I view it as a fan.
All right, I know the prism through which you're viewing it, but I think you're missing the large point. When you don't have Roberto Alomar to hit second, when you don't have that guy with a 370, 380 on base to hit second for you, what's the point of having a guy who's got a 320 on base hitting second?
But we don't have a 320. The only 320 hitter we have right now is Adam Lind.
I'm talking about on base, not batting average.
Okay. It's just uncomfortable for me every time I look in the lineup and seeing Bautista second and Roger Davis, one of our fastest, if not the fastest player, batting seventh or eighth, and he's hitting 300 limited games, yeah, mind you, but still, he's doing well where he's at. He's doing well with the games he's been in.
He is doing well with the games that he's been in.
I just like to get the fastest runners at the top of the order and then the heavy hitters batting them in. I just see more.
Yeah, I understand. I mean, I kind of moved beyond that thinking a long time ago. I think that it doesn't matter how fast you are. What matters is that you're on base, because you know if you're not on, again, doesn't matter how fast you are, right? You can't steal first. Rajay has been quite good in his limited playing time, and he's been quite good both ways. He's hitting about 295 against right-handers and about 300 against left-handers. So he's been outstanding, but in a very small amount of playing time. And if he continue, but in the overall, he's still got an on base of only 328, which is lower than Bautista's, lower than Encarnacion's, lower than Lynn's, lower than Reyes's. So he's not getting on base as much as these guys. And what you're really doing is you're wasting an out, and you don't have a lot of outs. You only have 27 of them. So when you're putting a hitter between your great hitters who's not as good, you're taking a chance that, you know, instead of Jose Bautista coming up in a big situation, Rajay Davis is going to be coming up in that big situation, and you're just hoping that he can keep the inning going to get to Bautista when you could have Bautista there. I understand that it's weird because we are used to speed at the top, slap hitter batting second, meat of the order hitting 3, 4, 5, but that's that's the way they did things a long time ago. And the smarter way to do it is to get your better hitters up as soon and as often as possible. Jay is in North York. Jay, welcome to the Blue Jays Talk on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Oh, hey, Mike. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to talk about Adam Lind, but if I could comment quickly, because you've had so many calls about the Bautista hitting second. All I could say, and I don't have the roster of every major league team in front of me, obviously, the best hitter usually hits third. Miguel Cabrera doesn't hit second.
Right.
In Baltimore, you got Adam Jones hitting third. I mean, you got the great young
Baltimore is their best hitter batting fifth, so that's not exactly
there
a
great. There you go. I mean,
Adam Jones hits fourth for them.
Although, it's nice to see that the baseball traditionalists are looking to maybe make a change and a shift in the philosophy, because I think it's not a bad idea to have a guy like Bautista hitting second. But all the callers who've been calling in do have a point, because throughout the whole history of the game, generally speaking, you don't have guys like Bautista hitting second. But that's not why.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean it's right.
Right, that's what I'm saying. It's nice to see a shift in the Neanderthalistic view of old-time baseball guys, where, you know, he has to hit third or fourth because he's big and he hits home runs. I mean, it's good to see that, and I kind of like it. Hopefully Bautista will start hitting better. Why I called
and if Miguel Cabrera was hitting second, you know, Detroit would be better off, too.
Yeah, I think Joey Votto hits second. I'm not sure.
He should. He doesn't often enough.
Yeah. Anyway, so why I called was, I know Adam Lind is probably have awful numbers against Lester. I don't know if he's 1 for 20, 1 for 30, 2 for 40.
This year he's hitting about 500 against lefties.
I'm saying against Lester, not lefties.
Oh, 3-for-29.
There you go. I knew it was brutal. But I don't care, because that's not the Adam Lind who we've been looking at. And I don't know how many teams right now. I think Adam Lind is in the top 5 or 6 in the American League batting average. I'd like to know how many players who are 5th or 6th or 7th or 8th or 10 in batting average in the major leagues are being benched because they have a poor history with a player over the last 2 or 3 years.
Want one, Jay? Remember John Olerud?
Of course.
He won the batting title in 1993.
Yep.
He sat on opening day because Randy Johnson was pitching.
Okay, that doesn't mean that everything that's gone in history is right. We've all made mistakes. But
no,
when
but
you
said you wanted
Mark
to know one. I told you one.
No, that's okay.
And look, everyone's going to get a day off. Adam Lind's not going to play 162 games. So is not the best time to give him the day off a game when they're facing a pitcher against whom he struggles terribly?
You know,
if you're
going to
give a guy a day off, isn't that the day you give him?
He's got to struggle through the tough pitchers that he's been struggling.
He's not going to play 162 games.
I know. Maybe I'm just thinking, with the Rosa, when Brett Laurie's back and healthy and the whole team is whole and Bautista's hitting well, and then, maybe Bonifacio's going to go on a little tear, and you got him who you could maybe put in center field. I just don't see this as the time, and he could DH. It's a sort of restful day. You get to bat every third inning or so, or every second or fourth inning or whatever. But he's hitting .322. You got to admit, with the lineup they put on tonight, Adam Lind, regardless of his history with Lester, he has been hitting well against lefties, and you got to give him an opportunity to win the game. And the team is better with Adam Lind in the batting lineup than without. And there's lots of ways that this lineup could have been juggled to have slotted him in there, either defensively or as a DH or moving things around at third base or all kinds of things. That's all I have to say.
All those things are true, but I can't remember the last time Adam Lind didn't play. And again, these guys aren't robots. They're not machines. You can't wear them into the ground. They need days off every once in a while, and the Blue Jays have been playing a schedule that really hasn't afforded them many days off in the last little while. Since they had the 2 days off on the West Coast trip, I think they've only had the one, and it was that rain out in Chicago. So Adam Lind's last day off that was not the rain out, the last time the Blue Jays played a game and Adam Lind didn't play, I'm having a hard time even finding it. May 8th or 9th was the last time that the Blue Jays had a game and Adam Lind didn't play. So he's played every day for almost 2 months. You need a day off here and there against a pitcher where you're 3-for-29. Perfect time to sit him down. Absolutely perfect time to sit him down. We have some audio from John Gibbons. We want to hear from the skipper, the Blue Jays, on their 7-4 loss to the Boston Red Sox today. So let's give a listen. Here's what John Gibbons had to say in the wake of this evening's loss.
Yeah, well, they dropped 7 on us. They looked good that first inning, getting some ground balls. And that second inning, the ball was coming up, and they didn't miss him, And then, against the good pitchers, they're not going to cough up 7-0 leads. We made a little run. We felt, you're never really out of in this ballpark, but, he's too good out there. And we made a couple runs, just too much to overcome.
The bullpen seemed to glow again.
Yeah, they've been lights out, and they gave us a chance. They kept us right there, but like I said, it was too much to overcome.
John, it seemed with Wong, he was trying to work the low error, but wasn't maybe getting a call, or maybe he was just down too much, and then it seemed to elevate on him, and they just started wrapping him around.
Yeah, they didn't miss anything that second inning, and then we had just trouble getting it out. But he's pitched great for us. This is just a blip, but good hitting team over there. Lefties. Lefties are the guys have been giving them trouble this year, and they stacked them in. And they, what that team has over there? They got those grinders, man. The guys that compete, and like I said, they come at you with good quality of bats, and they don't. It's tough to give up a 7-0 lead.
Do you have any idea what happened when Bautista missed?
No, I don't know whether he slipped, overran, or what, to tell you the truth. It's far out there,
looked
a little
like
fog.
He thought it was going to be
Yeah, I don't know. You got to ask him. You know.
For Juan, is it one of those days, or do you still have confidence in him?
Oh yeah, he's pitched great for us. You know, I mean that's baseball. That happens. That can happen to anybody. You know, so he'll bounce back. You were here last time. I told you no more. I'm not going to answer that question because I told you no more asking that.
Is there anything that Juan needs to improve?
No, because he's pitched great. I mean, this is one outing. I mean, he's given us a big lift. He really has, you know. I mean, he's a sinker ball guy, ground ball guy. So he's got, I mean, that's the name of the game for him. So he's got to get those. And to do that, I mean, you got to keep the ball down in the strike zone.
So there he is, John Gibbons, and the question that he's not going to answer, you could hear the smile in his face when he said it. There's a lot of Taiwanese media around now with Chenming Wong on the Blue Jays, and after every start, they need to know whether he's going to make his next turn in the rotation. And I think he got asked that about 8 times after Wong's first start. It went down to 5 or 6 after his second, and only once last time because Gibby said, "That's it, not letting you ask that question anymore." So he said, "No, I told you weren't allowed to ask that question." So Chenming Wong is going to make his next start. He got roughed up today. It was a terrible night. 7 runs in the second inning, and the Blue Jays could not overcome it. But we are back tomorrow, 7 o'clock Eastern Time, for a 7:10 first pitch. Josh Johnson looking for his second win as a Blue Jay up against Alan Webster, who is 0-2 with an ERA of 11.25, came over in that big deal from the Dodgers last season. Tonight, not so much, but tomorrow is another day, as they say. Thanks to all you for calling. Sorry to the ones we couldn't get to. We'll see you tomorrow.